You're listening to the CyberWire Network, powered by N2K.
Hey, everybody. Today, I want to highlight a name that all of us know well, and that is our sponsor, Splunk. You need to keep operations humming around the clock, but potential disruptions are everywhere. Splunk helps you predict problems and find and fix issues fast so you can reduce risk and ditch downtime. The world's largest enterprises rely on Splunk's unified security and observability platform to become more efficient, resilient, and innovative. With Splunk, you can react quickly, evolve faster, and be ready for anything. Stay ahead of disruptions. Learn more at splunk.com/resilience. And we thank Splunk for sponsoring our show. In the complex world of enterprise identity, securing legacy web apps at scale can be daunting. Strata Identity makes it simple. With Strata, you can effortlessly integrate non-standard apps with any identity service, like MFA or SSO, with zero coding and zero hassle. Designed by identity architects for identity architects, Strata works with every vendor, standard, and app architecture. This means your apps can now speak modern protocols and integrate seamlessly with your chosen identity services. From securing on-prem web apps to migrating away from outdated identity providers or consolidating them, Strata helps you keep your complex access policies as you modernize your identity infrastructure and get rid of technical debt. Join leading organizations like 3M, Dallas County, and CIBC in securing your apps with Strata. Visit strata.io/cyberwire, share your identity security priorities, and receive a complimentary pair of AirPods Pro. Offer valid for organizations with over 5,000 employees. Connect today at strata.io/cyberwire. The SolarWinds breach reportedly affected parts of the Pentagon. Microsoft and partners seize and sinkhole command and control domains used by Sunburst malware. The threat actor behind the breach used a novel technique to bypass multi-factor authentication at a think tank. Facebook takes down competing inauthentic networks focused on Africa. Joe Kerrigan has insights on Amnesia 33. Our guest, Greg Edwards from CryptoStopper, shares his experience getting back online after a derecho. And the execution of the FCC's rip-and-replace plan will likely fall to the next U.S. administration. From the CyberWire studios at DataTribe, I'm Dave Bittner with your CyberWire summary for Wednesday, December 16th, 2020. The scope of the SolarWinds supply chain breach continues to expand. The New York Times reports that parts of the Pentagon were compromised, although the extent is still unclear. A Pentagon spokesman told the Times, quote, "The DoD is aware of the reports and is currently assessing the impact," end quote. CyberScoop reports that the White House National Security Council has activated the Cyber Unified Coordination Group to coordinate the government's response to the incident. And the Wall Street Journal says White House National Security Advisor Robert O'Brien has cut short a trip to Europe and returned to the U.S. to deal with the incident. ZDNet reports that Microsoft has seized and sinkholed the domain that served as a command and control server for the malware used in the operation. Microsoft Defender also began blocking known malicious SolarWinds versions this morning, stating that it will quarantine the binary even if the process is running. Reuters says SolarWinds' security posture is now being scrutinized closely amidst reports of security missteps in the past. A security researcher told the publication that he informed SolarWinds last year that anyone could access the company's update server using the password SolarWinds123. Volexity describes an incident involving the threat actor behind the SolarWinds operation, presumed to be Russia's SVR. The actor first compromised a U.S.-based think tank and remained undetected for several years. After being discovered and removed, the actor regained access by exploiting a vulnerability in Microsoft Exchange Control Panel. The attackers were again expelled, but returned a third time via the compromised SolarWinds update in June and July of 2020. Notably, during its second appearance, the actor used a new technique to bypass the victim's multi-factor authentication solution, in this case Duo, after gaining administrative privileges on the victim's Outlook web app server. The security firm explains, quote, Velexity's investigation into this incident determined the attacker had accessed the Duo integration secret key from the OWA server. This key then allowed the attacker to derive a pre-computed value to be set in the Duo SID cookie. After successful password authentication, the server evaluated the Duo SID cookie and determined it to be valid. This allowed the attacker, with knowledge of a user account and password, to then completely bypass the MFA set on the account. It should be noted that this is not a vulnerability with the MFA provider and underscores the need to ensure that all secrets associated with key integrations, such as those with an MFA provider, should be changed following a breach. End quote. Ars Technica stresses that this could have been pulled off with any multi-factor solution, noting that, quote, MFA threat modeling generally doesn't include a complete system compromise of an OWA server. The level of access the hacker achieved was enough to neuter just about any defense, end quote. Facebook has taken down three competing inauthentic networks that primarily focused on African countries. One of the operations originated in France, while two were based in Russia. Interestingly, Facebook says this is the first time it's seen two opposing information operations, quote, actively engage with one another, including by befriending, commenting, and criticizing the opposing side for being fake, end quote. The French operation posted primarily in French and Arabic about news and current events, including France's policies in Francophone Africa, the security situation in various African countries, claims of potential Russian interference in the election in the Central African Republic, supportive commentary about French military, and criticism of Russia's involvement in CAR. Facebook tied this campaign to individuals associated with the French military. The Russian campaigns posted primarily in French, English, Portuguese, and Arabic about news and current events, including COVID-19 and the Russian vaccine against the virus, the upcoming election in the Central African Republic, terrorism, Russia's presence in sub-Saharan Africa, supportive commentary about the CAR government, criticism of the French foreign policy, and a fictitious coup d'etat in Equatorial Guinea. Facebook attributes this campaign to individuals previously associated with Russia's Internet Research Agency. Roll Call says the execution of the U.S. Federal Communication Commission's rip-and-replace order for Chinese hardware will be the responsibility of the incoming Biden administration and the U.S. Congress. The FCC estimates that the reimbursement costs to replace the equipment will be at least $1.6 billion. And outgoing FCC chairman Ajit Pai noted that, quote, we can't actually implement the reimbursement program unless and until Congress appropriates the necessary funding, end quote. The current top contenders to serve as Biden's FCC chair voted in favor of the rip-and-replace plan. What happens when your community is hit by an unexpected natural disaster, one that falls outside of the range of things you'd planned for? Greg Edwards is CEO at ransomware prevention firm CryptoStopper, and when his community got hit with a derecho, which is a weather system perhaps best described as a wall of wind, they learned a lot of lessons about getting up and running online.
I actually used to own an offsite backup and disaster recovery company. And during Hurricane Sandy, we did 9 simultaneous recoveries for companies on the East Coast. So we specialized in working with insurance agencies and had clients all over the country. And so we were prepared for events like that on the coast with hurricanes or earthquakes. But here in the Midwest, we were not prepared for something like this at all. Even having a disaster recovery background, we had all of our clients had cloud-based backup and local backup solutions, and really was only one of those that we actually enacted because they had a secondary location that's about 70 miles away that wasn't as badly affected that we could take their recovery servers and bring it back online there. But everyone else, because there was no power anywhere, it took waiting because you couldn't just have people go home and work from home because they didn't have power at home either. So really the recovery was about getting generators for companies that didn't pre-plan for that. The ones that did have generators and their buildings weren't too badly destroyed, we were able to get them up and going pretty quickly, but sent people to hotels and sent servers to different locations. It was from a disaster recovery standpoint, we handled it and didn't lose any data, but definitely lost more time than we would have liked because there just wasn't power.
But what are some of the lessons learned here in terms of, I'm thinking about derecho is not something that you all probably saw coming. You know, we had one here on the East Coast a few years ago. No one had ever remembered one in memory, and who knows if and when we'll have another one. But I think one thing, you know, people sort of agree on is that the weather isn't as predictable as it used to be. And so I'm curious, just from sort of a risk management point of view, what sort of take-homes do you have?
So I think the most critical thing that I learned from this is how absolutely important access to generators is. So I personally, at my home, I had a generator large enough to run most of my house. So I was very fortunate to be able to have, for the most part, power. I didn't have air conditioning, but you know, I can survive without that. So,
right.
But the clients had a couple clients that had full generators to run their, you know, run their entire buildings, and those clients were back up and running. And internet service took a few days to get back up, but for the most part, they were back up and going right away. People that didn't have generators were really the ones that were suffering more. So biggest takeaway is where are you going to get power? And secondary is where are you going to get internet?
That's Greg Edwards from CryptoStopper.
Managing the requirements for modern security programs is increasingly challenging and time-consuming. Enter Vanta. Vanta gives you one place to centralize and scale your security program. Quickly assess risk, streamline security reviews, and automate compliance for ISO 27001, SOC 2, and more. You can leverage Vanta's market-leading trust management platform to unify risk management and secure the trust of your customers. Plus, use Vanta AI to save time when completing security questionnaires. CyberWire Daily listeners can get $1,000 off by going to vanta.com/cyber. That's vanta.com/cyber.
And joining me once again is Joe Kerrigan. He's from the Johns Hopkins University Information Security Institute, also my co-host on the Hacking Humans podcast. Joe, great to have you back.
Hi, Dave.
Interesting story from Gizmodo. This is something we've covered here on the CyberWire, but I want to get your take on it. This is researchers discovered dangerous security flaws in code used in millions of devices. Right. What's going on here, Joe?
So this is a company called Forescout, and they found 33 vulnerabilities in 4 open source libraries that have been used in IoT devices.
Right.
So let me explain how this works from a software development or from a product development standpoint. when you're developing software and you need some functionality that is commonly available, you go out and you find these open source products that you can integrate into your software, and somebody else has already done all the work, and that's great, right? So now, like the one thing I needed was at one point in time I needed an SNMP protocol representation in code. So I went out and I found one. And I was like, this is great, and it's open source, and I can use it, and it worked fantastic. There was nothing wrong with it, or at least not that I knew of, right? There very well may have been some vulnerabilities in that product. And that's what these guys have found, is they have found these 33 vulnerabilities in four very commonly used libraries. Mm-hmm. So the free software makes it easy to get these products out the door, but now these products are out there, and there are devices from 150 manufacturers that are vulnerable, which is a very large footprint for these vulnerabilities.
Mm-hmm. Lots of IoT devices.
These are IoT devices, exactly. The article says that some people may say, just issue a round of security patches. And I'm sure that Forescout was responsible in their vulnerability handling, and they disclosed this information. And I'm sure that those companies have now gone ahead and patched all these vulnerabilities. And that's great for future releases. But there are still thousands, or if not millions, of these devices out there on the internet that have not been updated and are still vulnerable to these kind of attacks.
Right, right. And Forescout is calling this Amnesia 33 because of the 33 is for the 33 vulnerabilities.
Right.
I think it's an interesting dilemma here because, as you say, it's it makes total sense to not reinvent the wheel when
right.
there are
absolutely
functioning, well working things you can plug into your process that'll save you time, save you money. Have been through the ringer with other people testing them, but then time passes.
Right. And some of these products have been out there for, I think, 20 years, the article said.
Wow.
There have been these kind of open source libraries out there available for developers to use for a very long time. What's going to be challenging about this is getting these devices updated. If these devices were low cost, or if these devices have been discontinued, there is no way they're going to be updated. So people need to be aware of this. Go out and look in your infrastructure for these devices. See if you have any. And if you do, if you can't update them, replace them. That needs to happen.
Mm-hmm.
Because this is going to provide a foothold on your network.
Right, right. Yeah, I think about, we talk about how so many organizations don't have a good inventory of all of the devices that are hooked up to their networks.
Yeah, it's... And if you're working in a development environment, developers are, and I've been guilty of this as well, well known for just hooking something into the network and going, yeah, I'm going to use that, and never telling IT about it, never telling the
right.
the organization, I put this Raspberry Pi in the network.
Yeah, yeah, which, I mean, speaks to the need for security tools that can detect when you do that.
Right.
You know, security tools that can go in and take that inventory in some sort of automated fashion. But also having a checklist of,
right.
you know, what's been updated, what hasn't. And I don't know. I mean, should some things be in a regular replacement cycle?
I think they should be.
If a device is more than X number of years old and it's end of life, does that mean we should get a new one that is being updated? It's
yes.
an interesting question.
I think it should be. I think that's you do all kinds of other hardware replacement. You replace people's laptops every couple of years or 3 years, however long the warranties wear out on them, right?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Why not everything else? These things should have a life cycle that includes disposal.
Right, right. I just think it's so easy to, because these devices become out of sight, out of mind.
Right.
And I always think about that security camera sitting up there in the ceiling or in the corner of the warehouse or whatever, and it's doing a great job doing everything you want it to do. And so you just don't think about it.
Right.
It
might also be doing some things you don't want it to do.
Absolutely. Absolutely. All right. Well, it is Amnesia 33 is the name that the folks at Forescout have put on this list of security flaws. So do check that out. See if it applies to you. Joe Kerrigan, thanks for joining us.
My pleasure, Dave.
And that's the CyberWire.
For links to all of today's stories, check out our daily briefing at thecyberwire.com. And for professionals and cybersecurity leaders who want to stay abreast of this rapidly evolving field, sign up for CyberWire Pro. It'll save you time and keep you informed. All day strong, all day long. Listen for us on your Alexa smart speaker, too. The CyberWire podcast is proudly produced in Maryland out of the startup studios of Data Tribe, where they're co-building the next generation of cybersecurity teams and technologies. Our amazing CyberWire team is Elliot Peltzman, Guru Prakash, Stefan Vaziri, Kelsey Bond, Tim Nodar, Joe Kerrigan, Carol Terrio, Ben Yellen, Nick Vilecki, Gina Johnson, Bennett Moe, Chris Russell, John Petrick, Jennifer Iben, Rick Howard, Peter Kilpie, and I'm Dave Bittner. Thanks for listening. We'll see you back here tomorrow.